Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course. That's the name football, of the show. The other name is Off Topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got, and it might be hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you listen to this podcast too? And you rant about this podcast too. Just a site where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss between the bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Aston, they're calling out our name. Where will you listen to this podcast too? And you love this podcast too.
Welcome back to the latest Mountain West Connection podcast. Time to preview the next three games for the Mountain West. We have three bowl games coming up. Website, mwcconnection.com. Please subscribe to our website, to our podcast, because we want to get Matt a guacamole money for a burrito, to add to his burrito money. Do you like guacamole? I should ask that first. Okay, it's usually an extra, so that's good to add. Let me ask you this about burritos. You're in the California area. Is there a Freebirds burrito in your neck of the woods?
There was a Freebirds.
What do you mean, was? It closed down?
Yeah, because nobody ate there.
It's so good, though. Have you ever been there?
I did not go there before it shut down.
You're the reason why it shut down.
I'm the reason. Well, you forget that there's like a million places to get burritos around here.
Oh, I know that. There's because we're gonna go off topic right away just because I don't know why I thought of that. But Freebirds was really basically only in like Texas A&M. So every time I went to Texas A&M, had to go to Freebirds. I know that can make it seem better than what it really is because it's like people not from California let's go to In-N-Out or something like that. Kind of same thing, I guess, but. They finally expanded to basically, not everywhere, but a lot more places. I go to the one here, there's some in Utah, maybe once, twice a month. It's because it's not really convenient to where I live.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. And there's a lot of other burrito places around here, a lot of smaller run by people from Mexico or South America, a bunch of different ones. You got your other burrito chains, Chipotle, I stay away from them. Sorry if you like them, but I don't. I don't think they're any good. But I'm just saying it's really good. So I just brought that up because if you're near Freebirds, go check it out. Telling you, you won't be disappointed. Very good.
You know,
on to football.
You know what I would recommend real quick?
Oh, what is that?
If anybody out there never heard of 538's burrito bracket, Go check that out. Just run a Google search for burrito bracket and just find the nearest burrito place near you. Go there. I guarantee you will not be misled.
There's one other thing on that. There's one place. I went to Disneyland a couple years ago, spent like way too much money for going to like a week there with my family. Mm-hmm. It was all fun and everything, but I'm like, our good buddy Chris Hondras used to live in that area, sort of, and I think Irvine or whatever, somewhere in that area. So I'm like, hey, where's good to eat around there? Because eating at the hotel, but I don't want to go to McDonald's. I don't want to go to those. So I'm like, give me somewhere local to go. Eating at the park could be pricey. He's like, there's this place, because we stayed right across the street from Disneyland, got a pretty good deal. We could walk every day. Don't have to worry about that garbage. He's like, go down this road, like it's on the Harbor Boulevard. It's on your left. It's in some strip mall, super small thing. You won't really know there. It's kind of like if you ever go to, I don't know where people live, but it's like it's just like it's like maybe 12 people. Mm-hmm. It's super packed going there. I would get a burrito. Honestly, best burrito I've ever had. Ever. I don't remember the name. I just know there's some yellow sign. And it's like it's in some strip mall. We drove down there one night by myself, like at 9 o'clock, because everybody's in bed. I'm like, so good. So if you're in Disneyland, It's about, if you're facing a park, I would say it's a it's left if you're facing the park. Maybe a half mile down the road on your left again in the same Long Harbor Boulevard. Check it out. That's my recommendation if you're at Disneyland. Just because.
The move is, if anybody ever goes to San Francisco, go to the Mission and go to either La Taqueria or what's the other one? I'm trying to remember. Oh, man, I can't remember. El Farolito.
Okay.
Just do that.
Their food stuff is always good. I always love new food. Try new places. So,
all right.
Let's get to football. That's enough food talk. Football. Three games this week. We have first game is the I don't have my schedule in front of me. The Poinsettia Bowl.
It's San Diego County Credit Union Poinsettia Bowl.
Why does a credit union need to sponsor a bowl game?
Why does anybody need to sponsor a bowl game?
Good point, but something so centric to your location seems like a waste of money.
This one's for all the credit.
There we go. All right, so have you seen the I assume you've seen the line at some point in this game.
I have not.
Okay, so this game Wednesday night, 6 p.m. on the West Coast, ESPN television. What would you expect the line to be?
My first inclination is to say BYU minus 6.
It used to be that.
Oh.
It was around, I think it opened at 6.5. It's currently 9.
Really?
No, where's the respect for Craig Bull? Come on.
Well, I guess, you know, they must think that BYU's a fairly complete team. And when you kind of consider how the season's gone as a whole, it's kind of hard to blame them, right?
I could put plenty of holes in that team since I'm around them every day.
Okay, so...
Might be nitpicking for me.
So I know that we've talked about BYU a couple of times because they have run into some other Mountain West foes this year. So maybe I should reframe the question because I usually defer to you on all things Cougars.
Oh, great.
What has changed from the last time we talked to them versus now?
Was that the Boise State game?
I believe it was. Let me double check. Or no, it would have been the Utah State game to close out the season.
Oh, close season. Well, they have a new quarterback.
Is it Tanner Mangum again?
It is Tanner Mangum. Taysom Hill. Again, Utah State has taken Taysom Hill out, I think, 3 times in his career.
Mm-hmm.
It was some elbow, shoulder. I think it's a hyperextension of the elbow. They didn't get specifics into it. Not going to be. It wasn't healed up. Even with a month off, not going to be healed up to play. And that might actually make BYU's offense better. So good for that, I guess, for them. Basically, that's a big change. He's out. Tanner Mangum, if you don't know who he is, he – basically played all of last year during the Nebraska game. Taysom Hill had a Liz Frank injury. Played almost all the game. Mangum came in, helped lead the victory. A couple of Hail Marys. Back last September, you couldn't get away without seeing a BYU highlight because Boise State Hail Mary, pick sixes, and then the also Nebraska game. He's a better passer, clearly. People say Taysom Hill can get in the NFL, but my point is that he's a try-hard guy, and try-hard guys don't make the NFL. So he can throw down – Mangum throws downfield much better. He won't run as much as Hill did, as when you see Boise or Utah State or any game. Your views, because we've seen him plenty over the years. They will move the pocket a lot, but he's much more accurate. However, the wide receivers on this team are not very good at all.
Yeah.
Apparently they're practice All-Americans, what I hear.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, and I think I've mentioned it before, and I think it's worth mentioning again, is it's not necessarily an explosive passing offense as much as it is kind of an efficient passing offense. Because, you know, if you look at Bill C's five factors, one of the things he talks about is, well, two of the things he talks about are explosiveness and efficiency. And at the end of the regular season and after conference championship play, BYU's offense is 123rd in explosiveness.
Not surprising.
But they are within the top 40 in efficiency. And what's
is this passing efficiency or passing offense efficiency?
It just talks about offensive efficiency. So
because he's Jamal Williams, that's why.
Yep. Well, okay, so let me see if I can find another thing.
Let me tell you this. I believe they're 110th in yards per attempt. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. They don't pass the ball downfield. Their first 20-yard pass, we tracked this on the show I produced, was like 3 weeks in, I think, 4 weeks in. Could have been that Toledo game where they had their first pass over 20 yards. They're actually in yards per attempt. They're 114th in the country, 6.2. They only have 14 passing TDs, 11 interceptions, which won a game. Not terrible, not great. But it's a different QB, and if you look at what Mangum did last year, he's more accurate. He can throw better. He'll extend plays, not by running, but by extending the pocket to make a play.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, the receivers, they're not very good. They have a deep threat, and I mentioned before, Jonah Turnerman, he's not too bad. Nick Kurtz should be good, but they just don't – the thing is, they just don't catch the ball. It's like what we've been told. We talk to coaches, people at practice, other people who just let it, give us some info. They'll catch anything. Like, coaches will tweet out videos of during the game, guys making one-handed catches, amazing grabs in traffic. Game day comes, they disappear.
See, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because what stood out to me in looking at their football study hall profile is that I'm pretty sure all three of those guys improved their catch rate from last year to this year. You know, Nick Kurtz is at about 64%, Mitchell Juergens is at 62%, and Colby Pearson, the number three guy, is at 72%. And Pearson, most of all, is the guy who's had, I think, the most success, if you look at, you know, by success rate as well. He's the only one among their top receivers that's above 50%. And so if I'm Wyoming, I'm wondering how much focus you give him versus the other two guys.
I don't think you give extra focus to anybody in the on the right wide receivers. I don't think there's a point to do that.
You don't think so?
No. Like, they get some catch, but there's nobody that's going to be on this wide receiver core. There's nobody I'm like, I have to match up with them. I have to shadow with the safety, have a linebacker underneath. There's nobody I would particularly pay extra attention to. Yeah, I just don't think they're that good. That's the thing. Their passing's not very good. They don't go downfield, and so they'll do short passes, they'll do small stuff, but there's nobody like I don't have to guard. The only guy maybe if in this is probably would be only after a big play happens. If you have Jonah Tournament, because he's blazing fast, was a high school track champion in Utah, actually a former Utah State commit at one point. But he's the only guy, if they beat you downfield, that's the only guy may have a little extra help to if he beats you downfield once, maybe twice. That's about it. Everybody else, just cover, do your normal defense. Don't change anything up.
So let me ask you this then. Because, you know, obviously last year, Tanner Mangum was basically the full-time starter, right?
Yes.
So I'm looking at the yards per catch of the guys who came back, you know, Kurtz and Juergens especially.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their yards per target are way down this from last year to this year. So is it possible, now that Mangum is under center again, that they decide to take more shots down the field simply because Mangum is a guy that can do that?
I think that's a possibility. Because Ty Detmer, the OC, is saying the offense is not going to change drastically,
mm-hmm.
which makes sense. You're going to keep – but he did say, which all these things are, if you think about it, very logical, not going to extreme make over the offense. There will be a few plays here or there because Tanner Mangum does different things better or worse than Taysom Hill. Mm-hmm. One of those is running plays. He's not he can run a little bit, but he's not as good as running as Hill. So there, I expect more downfield passing, which, like I said, if it's like last year, but again, last year, Mitch Matthews isn't there. Devon Blackman's not there anymore.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like the guys, you know, the two big guys, Kurtz and Juergens especially, their yards per catch are the ones that are down the most. And I'm wondering if that's a direct consequence of having Hill under center rather than Mangum.
It sure is. Because if you know Ty Detmer, he wants to throw down the field. When he played in BYU, it's like he could throw the ball down the field. That's what he eventually wants to do. So I would expect more shots downfield. So Wyoming probably should adjust a little bit for that, because I guarantee they're watching every game last year for what Tanner Mangum was in. And then you got Nick Kurtz in the last year, Mitchell Juergens, and a few other guys. He's like a play. Never mind, not that guy. But that is the difference you'll see from watching BYU versus Boise or Utah State. There'll be more shots downfield, and he's more accurate as well. But again, I don't know if it was Taysom Hill throwing a bad ball. But again, in practice, what videos I've seen, people send us videos, they're catching it game day. They're Casper out there. I don't know what to say. They're not very good, as good as you would think. But right. Sticking to offense, like, here's the issue. They don't need to throw the ball because we know DJ May's out for Wyoming. Carl mm-hmm. Granderson's out. Chase Appleby. BYU's going to run the ball with Jamal Williams, who's as good as any running back in conference. Donald Pumphrey, Jeremy McNichols, Brian Hill on the other side of the ball. That's what's going to be the game plan, because we saw with those guys out versus San Diego State, what happened, man? They had 200 yard rushers.
Yeah. And I think that's going to put a lot of pressure on the guys who are left. You know, we know that Logan Wilson was a freshman All-American. You know, we know that Lucas Waka next to him, they're both having very good years at linebacker. they're probably going to need those guys to step up because, you know, the guys along the line at this point, like, you know, without Appleby, without, you know, Granderson, like, we know that Johanna Gaifan had a pretty good game in the conference title game against San Diego State. But, you know, is he going to be that same kind of disruptive force against BYU? That, I think, is probably going to be the key for the game for Wyoming, because you know that BYU is going to want to be balanced one way or another. Mm-hmm. But if they can find similar kind of success running the football, I think that that could make it a really long evening for the Cowboys.
That is, and that is the main thing. Like, they have, it'll be just Jamal Williams. They have, like, who's back there? Francis Bernard might get a carry or something. There's nobody, or Algie Brown, I should say. Nobody back there who's as good as Williams. Like, Williams, he's headed to the Senior Bowl, probably a top 10 running back for next year's draft. But he's a guy, he's not going to catch much out of the backfield. I don't know why they don't use him for that, but they won't, so you don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. But they just had to stop him running the ball because he can make off big plays, and he's explosive running back. That's the key. If they could, like, forcing Tanner Mangum to throw, it's still not ideal. But I'd rather have a guy who hasn't played all year in a new offense. He hasn't really played outside of practice. Had very, very, very few minimal snaps this year. I'd rather have him try to beat you than a running back who's going to be taking the third round of the NFL draft.
Yeah.
So, Wyoming, what do you, like, what, like, let's switch to the other side here. Brian Hill will do his thing. BYU's defense, it's, they have good players. Like, they have this guy, Butch Powell, linebacker, who's really good. Say Tao, too, on the defensive line, really good. He'll get to Josh Allen. But I think Allen, here's the thing with BYU, when they play mobile QBs or QBs that run around a lot, I know there's sample size isn't huge, but, like, when they, years before, when they were playing Chucky Keaton or playing those type of guys, they struggle to get those type of quarterbacks. Like, when they played West Virginia, I think their QB moves a little bit around. They struggle doing that. So Josh Allen will want to make a play. He just can't force a freaking play because BYU also has a good guy like Kai Nakua. They have Fred Warner in the secondary who are all really good, and that can pick you off. We saw Boise last year. Kai Nakua had a pick six against Boise State.
Yeah, that was going to be my big point, is that, you know, Josh Allen can't afford to give the football away. Because that's kind of what he did in the championship game against San Diego State. You know, obviously the Aztecs, they'll probably finish the year number one in total interceptions as a team. But BYU's in the conversation among the national leaders. They have 19 of their own, which is tied for fourth in the FBS. So if you're looking for, you know, something to keep an eye on, you know, obviously they're going to want to stretch the field with, you know, CJ Johnson and Tanner Gentry. But he can't afford to get careless because BYU, I think, is a defense that can make you pay for those kinds of mistakes.
Yeah, there's that. And they're a top third total defensive team. They're top 10 rushing defense. However, a little bit to be said when you're playing last half of the year, Cincinnati, Southern Utah, UMass, and Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if you include other games like West Virginia, they had only 149 yards given up. Mississippi State, it was a terrible, not a good team, 163 yards. Utah had 169, as with Joe Williams before he retired, then unretired to come back to play. So their rush defense is good. 3.5 yards, less than 3.5 yards per carry. Versus UCLA, who we know is not good now, less than 1.5 yards per carry allowed. So Brian Hill will need to, I don't know if this will be like the Vegas Bowl, where they just run and run and run and run and finally break through. That might happen. But we've seen Brian Hill where he either has big games or he just gets stuffed and stuff isn't going well. I think they're going to need, one's going to need the passing game to open up the running game. I know they don't want to, but I think a better chance to move the ball is throwing the ball against BYU.
So in that case, like, if you need one receiver to get like 100 yards and a touchdown, who do you think is the guy that has to do that for Wyoming to win this game?
Oh, Gentry for sure.
I think you're probably right.
He goes downfield as well, and so he has the size. We've seen what he can do and catch the ball. It's him. Like, Josh Allen needs to have a big game, but they're going to need – it can't all be on him because, like you said, the title game through those picks, had the fumble when he's trying to muscle his way through for that third and long or fourth and 9 yard play, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They can't have him do it. They need Brian Hill to have a big game as well, because then they go back to Nebraska. They were within striking distance in the fourth quarter. I think he had, 4 or 5 interceptions in that frame.
Yeah.
But they need – thing is, I think for them to win, they need Brian Hill to have a big game. or at least 100 yards, I would say. Because Josh Allen can get enough yards in the air, but if they're not running the ball well, I just don't know, because he's been good. He's been very good. 21 touchdowns, 5.5 yards a carry, doing very well. They need him to have over 100 yards, because they do, obviously, and it's cliche to say, if you have 100 yards, you do well. The offensive line as well, I know I'm jumping around, but like we said before, the strength coach, everybody's beefed up. They have isn't their center going to the Senior Bowl, Roulier? Is that correct?
I thought Roulier was a guard, but yes, I believe he is.
I think he's played both positions, but they have a guy going to Senior Bowl. Very good Pro Football Focus likes him. The offensive line's beefed up as well, and so this team, the 9 points is absurd to me. But I think that's where, I think what here's what Wyoming has to do. They need to just beat up on the line, do what they can, because BYU has got, like I said, Satachi's a good player. He'll get to the quarterback. He's the reason they beat Michigan State in that second half when he came in for a couple sacks. But they just need, again, I think it's just Brian Hill. I know they want to run to throw, but I think they need to throw a bit more and then get a pat, then get the running game involved. And that's kind of weird to say, but I don't know. I just think that's kind of what they need to do.
See, I feel like what they need to do is try to find some success early on the play action, which I think will come down to, you know, like kind of the opposite of what you're saying. I think they need to use the run to set up the pass. You know, because if they can connect on, you know, maybe one big 40-yard play to Gentry or something like that, that's the kind of thing that I think could change the tenor of the game overall.
No, that makes sense. I think, real quick, I'll let you finish, but I'm just saying, I think the reason I'm going with pass to run, because I think BYU is more concerned about Brian Hill than Josh Allen.
So, Football Study Hall, Bill C., gives Wyoming a 30% chance of winning this game. Are you saying
come
that
on,
that's
Bill?
That's not Bill, though. That's Bill's cold, hard math.
Somebody puts numbers in there. I'm just saying. No, I'm not going to go down that road. But I know this is one of, I think, four games where Bill and then also like ESPN Stats with FPI, 70% chance for one of the teams. The other was Air Force this game, and I forget what the other one was. But I do, because I think BYU, I know it's opponent adjusted, and BYU's opponents eventually have not been that great after Michigan State's not very good, Mississippi State's not very good. I mean, their best win? Like, honestly, their best win, it might be who'd they beat? Toledo? I'm serious. Their best win might be Toledo.
Toledo's a good team.
I know. Arizona's not a good team. Who else they beat? Mississippi State's not a good team. Cincinnati. Southern Utah, FCS, UMass, Utah State. I don't know. I'm just like, they haven't beat anybody good, and they maybe the number is skewed because they have won 8 of 9. Yeah, Michigan State, but they've dropped quite a bit. It's still a good accomplishment, but they're beating teams that are not very good outside Toledo. That's like Cincinnati's won 4 games. Maybe they're getting the credit for winning those that going on the 8 of 9 streak, or 7 of 8, I should say. Sorry, or yeah, 7 of 8, 4 in a row. But Cincinnati, Southern Utah, UMass, Utah State. Come on. That's nothing. They're winning those games, which is fine, and doing it reasonably easily. But I think it's too wide, because I know Wyoming lost to Eastern Michigan, which is weird, but I just think Wyoming they're not getting the credit they deserve. Like, they're almost a 10-point underdog. They're giving like a 30% chance to win. I think with BYU playing teams that are in big conferences, it skews the numbers a little bit, because these are opponent based, even though it shouldn't matter with Arizona not going to bowl game, Utah winning 8 wins, UCLA not going to bowl game, neither Michigan State. But I think it's too high. I think, honestly, it probably should be a toss-up game. I know the crowd will likely favor BYU, but I just think maybe it's too much for liking Craig Bull, but I just think but the thing is, well, the injuries are my issue too. Maybe that's where it's concerned as well. If Jamal Williams goes off, BYU is going to probably win this game by 2 touchdowns. That's my main key. Like, if BYU can slow down Williams, they could win. But if he runs big, I don't think there's any chance.
So, who do you have in this game?
I got to go with Wyoming, man. Come on. They're going to win outright.
Interesting.
I might be biased on this, but I'm sick and tired of people, like, doing my show. I follow the Twitter. All the BYU fans follow our show account, what I'm doing. Everybody, even guys on the show, former players, guys in NFL, hop on our show who played at BYU, played NFL. Probably 85% of them basically see this as a no-brainer victory, easy win, no matter what. No competition.
Interesting.
And I think that's a mistake.
I feel like I'm kind of with you. Like, I'm looking kind of at the schedule, and I feel like the numbers are a little bit deceptive, which kind of goes back to what you were saying about, you know, maybe coming into the year, we might have expected some of the, opponents to be a little better than they were. Mm-hmm. But
Michigan State made the playoff last year. They won 3 games.
Yeah, but, you know, they got, you know, they, you know, they, I'm looking at yards per play on defense, and I'm trying to use that to talk myself into Wyoming.
Like, who's BYU's yards per play given up?
Because if you look at where they've really been pressed on defense this year, it's the Toledo game, it's the Boise State game, and then in those opening weeks against Arizona and Utah. And I feel like Wyoming is balanced enough on offense, and, you know, Josh Allen has a big enough arm to really kind of force them to play on their heels.
But I don't think he's, like, him versus Logan Woodside, I'd take Logan Woodside out of Toledo.
Oh, you definitely. Know what I mean? But I think Allen is good enough to challenge this team. You know what? I'm with you.
Do it! Come
I'm
on!
I'm doing it. We're doing it together. Wyoming.
Stupid upset pick. And my point, circle back around before we move on, my point why pass before run, look what Toledo did. 8.7 yards per play. Not just pass play, per play.
And I feel like one other thing, like you said, I think most of the numbers have been skewed by how well the run defense has played in the last month.
Their secondary is terrible. We know that. I know that. BYU's for giving up yards. Kainuku can get a pick. They have Fred Warner, even his brother Troy Warner, very good. They give up too many yards. That's their issue. Too many
but
yards.
I was just going to point out, in the last month, BYU has played Cincinnati, Southern Utah, Massachusetts, and Utah State.
Exactly. False confidence.
Wyoming has a better running attack than all of those teams. And I feel like Brian Hill is going to have to make the difference.
I do. I just, my concern, again, Appleby and Granderson. Oh, man, those are two big losses.
It should be a good game. I think it'll be a close game, probably by a field goal difference. I'm thinking like 24-21, Wyoming.
So over-under is actually 57.
Yeah.
That's a lot of points there.
I guess I'll take the under then.
And looking at teamrankings.com and Number 5, they both have BYU winning by 8 to 10 points. So we're the outliers. Yeah. Wyoming victorious. All right, next game. Idaho versus Colorado State. Thursday afternoon, early evening at Albertson Stadium, Blue Turf. Excuse me. 5 p.m. local kick there on Mountain Time. Vandals won 8 games. Rams have won 7 games. This ticket, really quick, let's play this game again. So the average ticket price to get in, do you want to know what that is? Do you want to take a gander?
$12?
Not even close.
Are you just going to tell me because I don't know?
Sure. Average price, $70.
Holy cow.
Cheapest price on StubHub, looks like $55. That's a crappy south end zone tick view. Yeah, so it's not cheap to go to that game. I guess all the Vandal fans are driving in or who are in Boise going to that game, and it's not too far for a Rams fan to get in there, but it's a Thursday, take an extended Christmas break, I don't know. But and the line, would you want to take a gander of what that is?
Colorado State minus 13.
Almost got it. 13.5. Close enough.
Did you realize that Colorado State is ranked 23rd by S&P Plus?
For real?
For real.
Oh, they are. See right there. Yeah.
Right between North Carolina and Virginia Tech.
Telling you, man, they're playing the best football of any team in the conference right now. I know they lost to New Mexico, right? Was that it?
Yes, they did.
But they're playing very, very well. No, Air Force. That's what it was, Air Force. They beat New Mexico.
And I believe I read somewhere when they were announcing these bowl matchups to begin with that this Idaho Potato Bowl is the most lopsided by S&P Plus between two teams. Because Colorado
85%
State, because,
probability.
Because Colorado State is ranked 23rd right now. Idaho is ranked...
I got it.
Hold on, I got to scroll all the way down. They're ranked 96.
Keep scrolling. How did they win? They're in the Sun Belt, so that explains a little bit. Sorry, Sun Belt. They've won 8 games this year.
They did win 8 games this year. They had a little bit of a
rough
start. You know what they did? You know how they won 8 games? They didn't have to play Arkansas State. They didn't have to play...
Oh, they did play Troy, yeah.
They did play Troy. And you know what? I think it's telling that they got hammered by both Troy and Appalachian State.
So I've never seen this before. I'm looking at their advanced profile.
Mm-hmm.
3 times this happened. Win expectancy. 0% versus Troy. 0% versus Washington. 0% versus Washington State.
See, I think it's more interesting if you look at the Louisiana Monroe victory that they had. Their win expectancy was only 38%. I think that maybe they got a little bit lucky because, like, how many one-score games did they have this year? They beat Montana State by 3. They beat UNLV by 3 in overtime. Let's not forget that game.
Yeah.
They beat Louisiana Monroe by 3. And then they beat
South Alabama
by a touchdown. So maybe there's a little bit of luck involved in their getting to 8 wins, because if you look at the rest of their profile, like, they've been... fine, I guess. You know, like, just looking at their skill position players, like, let's start with the quarterback first of all, Matt Linehan, who in 3 years as a starter up in Moscow, he's made kind of incremental progress, but his stat sheet doesn't necessarily overwhelm you. You know, he only has 15 touchdowns to 10 interceptions. You know, he has a 61.5% completion rate, which is fine. You know, he has a sack rate of 5.4%, which is pretty decent. It's just, I'm not really seeing anything, you know, that really stands out to me. Like, their top 2 pass catchers are tight ends, if that tells you anything at all.
Yeah. Yeah, they spread it around quite a bit. Those 2 guys, Trent Cohen, Deion Watson. Then you have Alfonso Onuwor. I want to say they have 4 guys with 30 more catches. So Rams defense need to pay attention to who's going to get the ball, because they spread it around. Cohen's their red zone touchdown threat. Nearly 8 yards a target, 11 yards a catch. But they also, one thing they benefit from, field position is top 15 in the country. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal there. They're just average. Like, looking at passing downs, they're averaging regular passing downs. They're pretty good. They're top 3rd in efficiency, success rate on 3rd down. So they're doing okay on offensively. They're just an average team. I think you're right. Just got a little bit of luck here and there to finish off some games. Get a lucky break here or there, but that's, yeah.
To kind of put it in perspective, like, if you look at total defense, which I think is probably where they've made the most progress from last year to this year, you know, last year they were probably one of the worst defenses in the country. By yards per play, they gave up just a shade under 7 yards per play.
Cool.
And if you look at what they did in improving from last year to this year they gave up right around 6 yards per play. So they improved by a yard per play, but at the same time, it was only 8th in the Sun Belt. And if you compare it to kind of the big 3 in the Sun Belt, you know, Troy and Arkansas State and Appalachian State, they were still at least a yard per play behind those 3 teams. So while there's, you know, definitely a job to be commended on the defensive side of the ball, I'm wondering if that'll stack up once they start dealing with this particular running attack, because I don't know that they've dealt with a team that runs the ball as well or has been running the ball as well as Colorado State has.
I don't think so. Washington State throws the ball. Like, Washington doesn't run that much, really.
Mm-hmm.
So probably not. And then another area, when I mentioned field position, special teams. They're a top 20 S&P Plus special teams program, top 15 at 13th.
Interesting.
They score points well. Their field goal kicker is very good. Made every PAT. Only missed 3 on the year. They have a good return rate as well. Their special teams, that's where, like I said, that's why their field position is so good. And so they need short fields. And so they only have 1 special teams touchdown from Kendrick Trotter. On his also 1 attempt as well. He had a touchdown, it looks like, if I'm reading that correctly. But their punter's good. Their kicker's good. I know it's weird. It's like, oh, special teams wins it for you. But if you're that good on kicking on punts and converting points and scoring points, it's going to add up everywhere else. Because if you're like, like you said, they lost, what did they win? Two games by 3 points? Is that right? Two or three of them?
They were 4-0, I believe, in one score games.
Yeah, three of those were a field goal. If they had just an okay kicker, they could lose another. They had to maybe be at 6 wins or something.
Yeah.
And so that's an area where Rams, like, if they, because Idaho can move the ball well enough, it looks like. But I think the Rams defense, especially with what Marty English has been doing for the past second half of the year, I don't see, like, this is clearly the best team they played since Washington State.
Well, I don't want to say that. They're probably the best team they played since Appalachian State.
Okay, maybe App State.
Because,
yeah.
Like, again, the same thing we talked about with BYU. Look at who they played in the last month. They played Louisiana Lafayette, who was, you know, not quite what they were, you know, 1 or 2 years ago. They played Texas State, South Alabama, and Georgia State. That's not exactly a murderer's row.
Only one's going bowling, right? It's just the Jaguars.
And I believe Lafayette already lost.
Oh, they lost yesterday, right? They played the Cure Bowl, I want to say?
They played in the New Orleans Bowl.
Oh, geez, never mind. R&L Carriers, New Orleans Bowl. There we go. But also, look at their S&P. They're all 95 or 90 below or yeah. Higher. 128 Texas State. Idaho can make – they can do some things, but I just think the Rams will just do too much. I know Rams are losing Marvin McKenzie with that ACL, but they'll be fine with it. Yeah, it's a bummer, and hopefully – I'm thinking he'll redshirt next year. I don't see the point of him rushing back because it's November when that happened, late November. And so that is a disappointment, but they still have Izzy Matthews, Dalen Dawkins running the ball. They'll be fine. And the way freaking Nick Stevens has been playing, come on.
Yeah, I mean, they're up to, in conference play, they've averaged 5.6 yards per carry, which
is pretty good.
And, you know, even in November, that average went up to 6.72.
When they started using everybody.
That's when they really started hitting their stride. And that's kind of what I'm talking about. Like, I feel like that in itself is a huge mismatch. Because I feel like, you know, Idaho's been fine. But they haven't seen a team like this in a long time. And when they did, they really struggled against the top teams in the Sun Belt. And so I really don't see any reason why they won't struggle here.
I think they'll score some points because Rams do allow that at times. Let's just go for the picks here. Rams are going to win, but I don't know if 13.5 points is quite it because there'll be more Idaho fans in this game than there will be Rams fans. But I think Colorado State's probably going to win by at least 10 points.
I think this is probably the easiest call of all. I feel like Colorado State's going to win this one by at least 3 touchdowns.
Whoa, 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
I don't really see a path to victory for the Vandals. Like, they've had an okay year, but they've kind of done it beating up on teams that are worse than them. And every time they've come up against an opponent that's better than they are, they've really struggled. And I don't think it's any stretch to say that Colorado State's been a better team all year long than Idaho has.
All right, I'll change my pick. They'll win by 2 touchdowns. They'll cover the 13.5.
All right.
All right, so next game, go to Christmas Eve, which, you know what stinks about this game?
I don't know what stinks about this game.
Well, NFL is also Saturday because it's Christmas Eve.
Oh, well, nobody cares about the NFL.
It's also later. I'm just saying, it's later, so they're probably. I don't think there's a game up against it, but NFL is playing. Just saying, people like NFL more than college.
Well, I'm
weirdos. Weirdos do, but they do.
Right now, I don't care about the NFL.
Oh, sorry. I have my Cowboys game ready to watch shortly, so. But let's get stick to this game here. So it's just something to watch. But Hawaii Bowl playing. Where would you put Middle Tennessee State? They're playing Middle Tennessee State at home. ESPN. It's a. I don't know what time it is in Hawaii, but it's a 5 p.m. Pacific time kick. What's that? 1 p.m. in Hawaii?
It would be 2 o'clock in Hawaii.
2 o'clock. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah, because there's 6 hours difference from East Coast. So okay. So, yeah, 2 p.m. out in Hawaii, midday, good time for a Christmas Eve lunch if you're out there, I guess. Late mm-hmm. lunch, early dinner, or something you want to call it. But one thing about Middle Tennessee State, they're 8-4. They're out of the good old moved up to the Conference USA from the Sun Belt. Here's the one issue. Here's the I'll say it right now. Difference in the game is if Middle Tennessee State gets Brent Stockstill back or Stockstill back in this game, their quarterback.
Definitely.
That's what it comes down to, essentially, I think.
Yeah,
he's been out with a broken, had a clavicle injury, broken collarbone.
Yeah, because when he's healthy, he has a very strong argument as being the best quarterback in the group of five. Like statistically, he wasn't quite on the level of, say a Brett Rippon this year or Logan Woodside or Zach Terrell or anything like that. But, his stat line is still very impressive, all things considered. He has a nearly 3-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. He passed for over 3,800 yards, had about, 7.5 yards per attempt. They put a lot on his shoulders, and more often than not, he answers the bell. And when you consider that's where Hawaii has really struggled at times this year, is stopping the pass. If he's back to 100%, I feel like there's a very big offensive bonanza waiting to happen in this game.
Because he injured it in the season finale, correct?
Yes, I believe so. Because he
It
was
was late.
11 of 16, and I don't think he would have done that.
No, he would have done
Because they dropped
much less.
77 points on Florida Atlantic in the season finale.
So no, not a chance. Also, I looked at that stat line. It's all running. I'm like, whoa, he didn't pass for that many yards. It was all running. The backup had 0 passing touchdowns in that game. Oh man, I got an error page. I'm trying to look up at the Daily News Journal. I had a page open earlier, but I saw somewhere he's practicing, I think, with full pads. But like we saw with going back to week one in Australia, Davis Webb throwing the sling it against Hawaii. That is an area where they have issues because I forget the receiver for the Bears, but he was just, was it Colin something? Whatever. He was just doing what he wanted to do. And so Hawaii's also struggled. While they've won 2 in a row, they've lost 3 of 5. But again, New Mexico, San Diego State, Boise State, tough games to win. They beat Air Force, remember, on the mainland. Beat Fresno, sorry. And then squeaked past UMass at home. What do we need? What is like, it's why you need to run the ball with their tree, with their guys back there with a lot with I was gonna say Stephen Lakalaka. That's not correct at all. Really? Paul Harris. He's
Paul
the guy you want to run the
Harrison,
ball, right? Paul Harris and
St. Juste.
St. Juice, yeah, so I
That's an
think that's.
interesting question. I'm trying to think about this, and I'm trying to see where Middle Tennessee struggles. And I feel like what they need to do is find big plays in the passing game. Because obviously, they're going to want to run the football because they have two or three guys back there who can do it. But I'm interested in seeing just how much of a factor someone like Marcus Kemp is in this game, because he's the one guy on the team who's combined a pretty solid catch rate with
Hold on, I gotta stop you here.
a.
Let me read you this really quick. Tell me if you spot the error from good old ESPN.com. Best
Okay.
moment for Hawaii. Quarterback Marcus Kemp threw a pair of touchdown passes to Drew Brown in consecutive overtime periods to lead the Rainbow Warriors past Air Force and Colorado Springs. Come on!
Well, what can you do?
Sorry, continue your thought if I didn't derail you enough.
Nah, it's fine. I was just going to say, because I feel like, if you look at what Hawaii has been doing on the whole this year, they've found a lot of success throwing the football. Like, they're, I believe, third in the conference on the season in 20-yard pass plays behind just Boise State and Wyoming. And when you compare that to what Middle Tennessee has done, I don't know that they've necessarily been challenged downfield all that much, the Blue Raiders have, because they're below Conference USA's average in 10-yard passing plays, but they're just third in 20-yard passing plays on defense. So I'm wondering if Hawaii will try to push the envelope just a little bit to soften things up for that running game, because they've had success in doing it before. And if a guy like Marcus Kemp can have a big, pass play or two early in the game, he's the one guy that has really averaged, he's kind of the big play guy. He's averaged almost 15 yards a catch and 9 yards per target. So if Drew Brown can find him once or twice early, I feel like that's something that I would watch out for if I were a Hawaii fan.
That too, like they 11 interceptions is just okay. They give up that. They allow not great. It's okay, 58% passing. But Drew Brown, we know, can make plays on his legs too. So that could be an added bonus. Well, I guess going down the field to Dylan Colley or Josh, is it Sua? I believe I should know his name.
Are you talking about
And then
Jeremy Sua?
genre shooter, sorry, yeah. Marcus Kemp. I think, yeah, you're clearly right on that going downfield. But I think also if Brown can make some moves, plays with his legs, whether running like he can or just extending the play, that could be an extra, just something additional Middle Tennessee State has to pay attention to. He's not a guy who's going to sit back and pass downfield.
Yeah, but I mean,
so doing rollouts and those things could be just something a little extra to make them not just bring six guys in rush or seven guys in rush. They have to pay attention and respect what he can do with his legs.
Yeah, and I feel like to your point about running the football for Hawaii, you know, there have been times where Middle Tennessee has struggled. Like, you know, Missouri ran all over them in that really wild game they had back in October. And, you know, even a team like UTSA and, you know, Marshall, you know, they're, you know, we talked about the Roadrunners, and of course we saw them play in the New Mexico Bowl a couple days ago.
Ran pretty well.
But they did run pretty well against Middle Tennessee. They averaged about 4.6 yards per carry, which is fine, you know. And Marshall wasn't a great team this year, but they still managed a little over 5 yards carry themselves. So they've been a little more suspect late in the year trying to defend the run than they were early in the year. Because, you know, when they beat Louisiana Tech in September, they did it on the strength of, I think, the fact that they were able to hold the Bulldogs to just 3.2 yards per carry. If Hawaii can at least get to their average of what they've done on the ground this year, I feel like that's a really good sign for their chances of winning this game.
Also, another good sign, 35 touchdowns allowed on the ground.
That too.
11 in three games, 16 in four games.
It's pretty good.
Six in that wild, that Florida Atlantic 77-56 victory, six touchdowns allowed on the ground.
Yeah, and I mean, in conference play, Hawaii averaged just under 5 yards per carry, which I think coming into the year, we never would have imagined them doing that. So while no they way. Were a little bit uneven at times, I think on the whole, they've shown that to be a real strength of theirs. And, you know, on the flip side, you know, Hawaii's defense has been a little bit suspect. So the one guy that I would say they have to watch out for is Middle Tennessee's dynamic running back, Itavius Mathers, because he's been not only a really dangerous runner, like he's averaging over, you know, 6.5 yards per carry. He, I'm pretty sure, was an all-conference pick, and he did it because he had 1,500 yards on the ground, but also had just under 600 yards as a receiver. So he's kind of like a James Butler type, if we're looking at it that way. He had 62 catches this year. He's the guy that I think can do it all regardless of whoever's under center. And we know that Hawaii has really struggled to stop, you know, really strong running games at times this year. So if there's one guy I think that's going to be really key to stopping, it's him. And that, I think, puts a lot of pressure on, you know, the linebackers, especially for Hawaii, who've been pretty good, all things considered, this year. Like, I've talked at length about Jelani Tavai, who's more than lived up to the hype, I think, in stepping up to a starting role, because he's the team leader with 17.5 tackles for loss. Beyond him, though, I think you're really looking for guys like Corey Rasmussen, you know, Makani Kemakeleawea. Did I say that right? I hope I did.
Better than me.
Better than you and Chris. You know, so I think the defensive line is going to have to step up. But, you know, again, if their stars can step up on defense, and especially a guy like Tavai, who's been basically playing sideline to sideline week after week, you know, stopping Mathers, I think, is priority number one, especially if Stock still is at 100%. You know, he's the guy that I think makes this offense go more than the quarterback does.
He exactly right. Also, one thing to note, like, they're playing a good running attack, but it's also not unfamiliar to them. They played San Diego State, they played New Mexico, played Boise State. They played Boise, right?
Yes.
Or, no, that's the wrong team there, but yes, they did, sorry. But yeah, I'm saying, so they're used to playing against these teams that can run the ball well, so it's not unfamiliar, but it's still something they struggle with and need to do better at. And I still think, like, I think Hawaii's going to win this game, I think. I don't know, because Middle Tennessee State, I don't want to say every Mountain West team's going to win, but Middle Tennessee State is pretty good. They're actually projected to win this game, 62% win probability by five points projected margin of victory. I the question at quarterback is an issue, because even if he doesn't play, like, who was the one game he played. If you look at his box score, I mean, pulled up here again. He, like I said, every touchdown was on the ground, and that went over FAU, 77-56. Trying to get here, he didn't throw. I think he only threw a handful of times, which is weird. They had four guys throw the ball. Well, Matt Mathers is running back. So who is it? Is it Richie James? Who's on there? Who's second on their back on their depth chart? Is that who's?
I think Richie James was their leading receiver.
Oh, sorry. They had four guys throw a ball. I should have pulled that up before. But
Hawaii has John Ursua, and if you're looking at Football Study Hall, Middle Tennessee has a guy whose name is John Ursua with a Z.
That is hilarious. That's
my favorite fun fact of the bowl season.
That's a good fun fact. Yeah, he's their backup. I just double checked their depth chart. That's pretty nuts. He was 3-6 for a TD. So, that last game is hard. There's not much. Just what he's done all year. He's had 78 attempts for he. He played the last four games. I apologize. I thought it was the last game where Stock still was out. He's been out for a month. Mm-hmm. But if you look at further back, we should do some more research before we start this thing. I'm telling you. But but like versus UTSA, it's kind of a good comparison. He was 14-27. He's throwing pretty well. Over 200 yards versus Marshall and Charlotte. Completes 55% of his passes, 59% of his passes. So he can throw it pretty well, but I don't know. If Stockso was playing, I would say the Blue Raiders would win no matter what. But with him maybe not playing or not healthy, I still may go with Middle Tennessee State.
Okay, so I just went to the Middle Tennessee State's athletic website, and from 2 days ago, it says that he took, you know, he participated in practice, took snaps with the first team offense, and that they are optimistic that he's going to play.
I think I saw a tweet similar to that the other day. I just couldn't find it.
I feel like this is a first to 40 situation. And I feel like as good as Hawaii's been this year, you know, creating explosive plays, if I had to trust an offense to get down the field, you know, 80 yards, maybe they were down by 6 late in the game, I feel like I would trust Middle Tennessee's offense a little bit more, especially if Stock still is under center. Like, what's the line for this game? Did we talk about that at all?
So, yeah, I don't see a line anywhere for some reason. Even history could be the QB issue. Mm-hmm. Football Study Hall has a 5-point margin of victory projected for the Blue Raiders. So, it sounds about right. Depends on the QB situation. So, that's kind of where we're at.
I think I would probably take Middle Tennessee State in this game.
Outright?
Yes.
Why do you hate Hawaii, man? Come on.
I don't hate Hawaii, man. I just feel like, especially if Stock still is under center, they're going to have a really hard time trying to deal with him.
I agree.
I feel like, you know, Hawaii's definitely going to score some points in this game. It would not surprise me if it were something like, 45-30 or something like that, 45-38. I think it'll be super competitive, but I feel like in the long run, Middle Tennessee State just has, you know, one or two more consistent weapons and a little bit better defense that I would trust.
Really quick, Florida Atlantic, who just lost to Middle Tennessee State 77-56, won 3 games this year.
Huh.
Here's the points allowed that are kind of interesting, or at least a lot. La Tech, they gave up 34 points, 44 to Western Kentucky, 45 to Missouri, 35 to FIU, 45 to UTSA, 42 to Marshall, 31 to Charlotte, and then 56 to Florida Atlantic. So points are going to be take the over. If there's an over, take the over. I'll tell you that right now. And but the thing is, real quick, can Hawaii keep up with that? That's the thing. I don't know.
That I think is going to be interesting to find out, because I'm just going to throw one last number out there. Mm-hmm. Both of these teams are right next to each other in the top 15 in finishing drives. Ooh. So they are 14th and 15th respectively in points per trip inside the opponent's 40. So if they're able to move the ball, chances are they're going to punch it into the end zone. You know, whoever is going to be able to do that more consistently We'll find out.
TBD. All right, so who's your pick? Are you taking the Middle Tennessee State?
I'm taking the Blue Raiders, yes.
I'm also taking the Blue Raiders, unfortunately. I think even the backup QB, they're tough to beat. I give them a much better chance if Stockstill's not playing. But for what we know, and I know this game, recording this about 4 or 5 days before, I got to go with the Middle Tennessee State because they've done it by scoring a lot of points and getting wins. In Hawaii, they don't score. And I don't think they could – not that they can't. It's just tough, in my opinion, for them to score that many points. Like, they only scored 13 or 14 versus Fresno State.
Yeah, that was a weird game.
It was. I know. I'm just saying, like, when you look at how many points they scored, yeah, they – UT Martin – because Hawaii, really quick, they scored 31 versus FBS team. They scored 31 versus Cal, 38 versus UNLV, and then 46 versus UMass. So they're not used to scoring a lot of points. And that something to look out for. Just something.
Honestly, I'm just going to be thankful that I can actually watch Hawaii for once.
That too. Yeah, ESPN, no Time Warner Oceanic.
That is the Mountain West's gift to me as a football fan.
Christmas Eve, who cares about your family? You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Pull up the app or do something I definitely, because this game will be, if it's exciting as what Middle Tennessee State can do and what Drew Brown can do, this could be one of the more exciting bowl games.
Yeah.
So that's it for tonight. This is our preview show for the second batch of games. We'll be back after Christmas to discuss these games and preview the we got two bowl games after that. Sorry. We have Air Force versus South Alabama, Boise versus Baylor. So we'll talk about those as well. But that's the show for tonight. SoundCloud, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher, subscribe. Leave a review if you would like. So hope you guys enjoyed the burrito talk at the beginning and hidden gems. So we'll see you next time. And as always, yes, we are biased against you.